CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, speaking with Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator, writing at the Atlantic Monthly. America's future is at sea. America's future is to build ships that we need for the challenges around the world. Jerry's book of To Provide and Maintain a Navy has a wonderful chart that I refer to all the time. We need large unmanned surface vessels. We need ballistic missile submarines. We need guided missile submarines. We need attack submarines. Certainly, we need a surface fleet. All of that has to be built, and that what will build it is the economy itself, the industrial economy. How so, Jerry? What is it that we need to do before we launch those ships?
Well, John, one of the problems we have is that the price of the average Navy warship has doubled since the end of the Cold War. And I'm talking like the same ship. So we began building Arleigh Burke-class destroyers in the late 1980s. They first entered the fleet in 1991. That same type of ship, although it's been modernized several times, has doubled in its price, even taking into account inflation. And that's because, essentially, the competition has gone out of shipbuilding. So there's no competition in the downstream part suppliers. There's heavy competition for labor in that we've had a declining labor force that's qualified to work in those shipyards. We need to find a way of reinflating that defense industrial base and specifically the shipbuilding industrial base so we can drive competition back into it, increase competition for part suppliers, lower the overall cost of components. And I believe that, in fact, we can have a stronger Navy. But part and parcel of that is we need to invest again in civilian shipbuilding, the merchant marine fleet of our nation to carry our goods and supplies. That will create not only well-qualified laborers who know how to, bend steel and weld and do pipe fitting and the electrical wiring that goes on with ships, but those jobs can move back and forth between defense shipbuilding and civilian shipbuilding, and that's going to help us overall in sort of growing the economy. We sort of moved away from the idea of industrial manufacturing in this nation. Now we're finding that it's a national security concern, and that's a problem.
You take us to a dinner party held in 1993. The host was Deputy Secretary of Defense William Perry. The guests were, well, this is a witch's brew of the military-industrial complex. The message was, you will survive if you merge. That cost the Navy. How so, Captain?
Well, it cost all of the defense industries. Essentially, Bill Perry gathered all of the senior executives from the major defense firms in the United States, and he was looking out across the budgets that were projected for the 1990s and the significant cutbacks due to the dividend, the peace dividend. And he told him, he says, if you don't merge, you die, because there's just not going to be enough contracts coming out of DOD. We refer to this dinner today as the Last Supper, because this is where all the mergers, came about. So this is essentially where the beginning of why Boeing then absorbed McDonnell Douglas, which had been McDonnell had absorbed Douglas Aircraft. And you even look at Lockheed and Martin Marietta coming together to form Lockheed Martin. And General Dynamics began to buy up several smaller companies and bring them all underneath its rubric. This has consolidated the defense industrial base. And yes, it did allow it to survive the lean years. But what we've now understood is that, in fact, strategically, that may have been a mistake in that we took competition out of that market. And now we need that competition to come back as we look at ramping up our defense budgets, not just for the Navy, but for the Army and Air Force as well. And we need that competition back. We need multiple lines of production of significant weapon systems, ships, missiles, aircraft. And right now we have really singular lines of those. And so we need that competition back in the marketplace.
Friendshoring, onshoring, nearshoring, all this talk is about the goods that you can buy at Walmart's. That is not necessarily about what you're addressing, the industrialization of the ports in order to build ships again. Now, Jerry, a question. South Korea builds ships. India builds ships. Is that adequate for us? Do we have to have it inside our border, or is it adequate for it to be with our allies?
Well, John, within the Department of Defense and within a lot of the National Defense Authorization Acts as well as appropriation, there is a Buy American requirement. So although we recognize that the Japanese and the South Koreans and even our friends in Italy and France make some really good ships, the fact is it's against the law right now for us to procure ships for the United States Navy from foreign shipbuilders. Now, I have no doubt that in a national emergency, if we really had to get a lot of ships in a hurry, that we might take a look at that. But for right now, the law of the land is that U.S. Navy ships need to be produced in U.S. shipyards by U.S. workers. Now, there's a part of that we can have some supply and component parts that come from overseas. But for right now, the ship must be built and assembled here in the United States.
I think we've talked recently, Captain Hendricks, about the shipyards that, for refits. And we're down one, is my memory, for refits of either submarines or carriers. I can't remember what. So not only are we not building ships, we don't have enough to take care of them if one or more of the refit yards go down. Is that a good memory for me?
That is correct, John. If you look at the depot level maintenance of our nuclear powered vessels, our aircraft carriers, as well as our submarines, we do not have sufficient capacity within the public shipyards to maintain those vital ships. So we lost three dry docks for submarines up in Puget Sound, Washington, and we lost the West Coast dry dock for our Nimitz-class aircraft carriers due to regulatory oversight and fears about earthquake damage to those. So right now, we're 2 years behind on submarine maintenance as it stands right now, and we're going to fall farther behind on aircraft maintenance because we've lost access to these shipyards. We really need at least one to two additional public shipyards in the Navy today in order to catch up on the maintenance that we've already fallen behind on.
An aspect of those shipyards, the builders, is people. And my memory is we don't have a sufficient work base right now. We're not training a work base to work in those yards. We might not be paying the work base to pay attention to this need. How long will it take to train up people who can build ships?
Well, John, you can start doing apprentice and journeyman and bringing shipyard workers in today, and they might be ready and skilled in about a year. If you're looking for a nuclear certified welder, someone who can weld on a nuclear power plant, that you're looking at 1 to 2 years to certify that welder to work on their own. So this is not a quick ramp up. This is something you need long lead planning. You need the Congress to step in the way that Carl Vinson did with the Vinson Two Ocean Navy Act in 1940 in order to, you know, to give you the outcome that you want in the war years.
And now we come to another problem, which is the public. The public doesn't know this, Jerry. I'm the public. If it wasn't for your essay in The Atlantic and your book about the Navy, I wouldn't be aware of the shortfall, because the U.S. Navy always projects confidence and power whenever you see it in a video or whenever you have a report of a confrontation in the South China Sea. Is the Navy adequately making its case to the Congress and to the American people?
I don't think so, and that's why I've been writing about this for most of the last 10 years, is I think that the Navy has been inarticulate in talking about its requirements, or it's been hesitant to do those requirements, which is why writers such as myself are retired naval officers, and I've got a few friends and colleagues. Unfortunately, we're starting to see leadership from the Hill as well. You know, Representative Gallagher, Senator Wicker have both been articulate spokesmen for sea power and shipbuilding, and there's some other voices out there. But I think that we're entering an age where perhaps the Congress is taking the lead on rebuilding the Navy. And that's actually a good thing. It's been done in the past. It's been done five different times in the past where the Congress is taking the lead. And right now, I don't think the Congress is waiting on the administration for shipbuilding plans. It's moving out on its own.
Not only warships, if I understand correctly. You're talking about merchant ships, container ships, super tankers. You're talking about everything, not just specifically a destroyer.
That's correct. We need civilian shipbuilding because, again, that helps to create workers. It also helps us in our economy by carrying U.S. goods on U.S. built hulls. So everyone is aided by this, and we can get a little bit more into the subsidies that are required to maintain our shipbuilding industry on par with the Europeans and the Asians. That's a longer and deeper conversation.
Once upon a time, we had ports and docks up and down the West Coast, up and down the East Coast, into the Caribbean. Do those still exist to be reawakened, or are we starting from scratch?
There are two ports on the West Coast that I'm particularly interested in. One is at Mare Island, where there are three dry docks, and then Hunter's Point near San Francisco, where there are four dry docks. Hunter's Point was shut down as a Navy yard, has not been reopened yet because of environmental concerns. Mare Island has been largely redeveloped so far as the land around it, but those three dry docks still exist there, and we could make some good investments in a short order of time in both of those places.
And does it compel the private enterprise, the military-industrial complex, what's left of the big companies, does it compel them to build there? What do they need to make it happen, Jerry? What does Congress have to do to start this for private enterprise?
John, I think the Congress has to step out and say that not only is there going to be a short-term interest in regrowing civilian shipbuilding and Navy shipbuilding, but it's a long-term interest because industry needs the promise of long-term returns if they're going to make a big upfront investment. And so we really need kind of a 10-year plan for regrowing not only the Navy, but the civilian shipbuilding industry. It's got to be a sustained level of effort.
You mentioned Elon Musk in your essay. We're putting a great deal of trust and confidence and inspiration into the low Earth orbit and Moon and Mars. Is it something possible, comparable for the U.S. Navy, a moonshot for the Navy?
I think it does have to have a significant level of effort. You have to kind of have a Manhattan Project level of focus on this now due to the sort of the strategic extremists that we find ourselves in.
And Jerry, in making this moonshot, who can make the case? The president? You mentioned the Congress, but that's, you know, several hundred people. Where in Washington can the leadership come from? Because right now, Jerry, reading your essay, I nod along and I go, yes, but the status quo says we're fighting a war in Ukraine. We haven't got time for the Navy.
John, really, this can only happen when there's an alignment between the president, the secretary of defense, the secretary of the Navy, and the Congress. If you're going to make this level of effort, you need that alignment from the senior leadership in the national security establishment all the way down to the Senate and the House with a strong Pentagon in between. And we just have not had that since the end of World War II. But that's the type of alignment it takes to make a major effort at this type of a rebuild.
You want rebuilding quite in excess of anything now being discussed, if I read the essay correctly. Is that correct, Jerry?
That's correct. We're talking about not just 5% year-over-year growth in DOD budget. We're talking like we need that level of growth in the Navy Department year-over-year for the next 10 years, and we need a strong signal. That way the industry can get aligned, the civilian industry can get aligned, and we can actually see that real growth. So this is no small thing. I'm talking about in this essay that the nation needs to make a conscious decision to become a sea power again and then implement that decision on a large scale.
The essay is America's Future at Sea by Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired. The subhead, the nation is ceding the seas to its enemies. It's not too late to avoid catastrophe. I waited to read that because what can go wrong and why when we come back? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.